صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبو القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، يا أيها الذين آمنوا آمنوا، صلوات على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
In order to recognize Imam Hussein عليه السلام, we need to see the differences in his message, in his task and responsibility. What were those differences from other imams? In order to truly understand the movement of Ashura and the undertaking of our Imam, one of those differences is in the enemies that he faced. Who were these people who opposed Imam Hussein, and what was it that was different from the enemies who opposed Imam Ali or Imam Hassan or other Imams? And only by analyzing these differences in depth can we know what the school or the message of Imam Hussein was. It is not enough to say that this was a battle of haq and batil, good and evil, truth and falsehood. A simple statement like that would be doing injustice
Ya Allah
to what Imam Hussein had done. We need to see what sort of batil, what sort of evil, what was the distinction of this batil, what was the distinction of this evil that made Imam Hussein do what he had done and that distinct message to become clear for us. As I had mentioned that the group of people yesterday, I had mentioned that the fact remains that Imam Hussein was the only Imam who was killed by the people. Mm-hmm. Every other Imam was killed by certain person, whether he is the Khalifa, whether he was the leader of the Muslims, or whether he was someone like Ibn Muljim. You can point to and say that he was the one who assassinated Imam Ali and martyred Imam Ali. And every other Imam, there was someone, you can say that he is the person who did this. But in the case of Imam Hussein, you see it where the people came out to kill him. And Imam Hussein also intended to bring out these people.
Ya Allah.
Because this fourth group of people that fought alongside Imam Ali were the reason why these tyrants and these dhalimeen and these oppressors were doing what they were doing. So now, amongst these people, we need to see that, you know, who were these people? In identifying them, what was their qualities? What was their characteristics? I mean, they were a group of people who opposed Imam Ali, people who opposed Imam Hassan, and those who opposed Imam Hussein. Who were this cream of the crop, the special people, the elite, that we take names of? What was their characteristics? What were their qualities? Something that we need to understand if we want to truly understand who and what Imam Hussein was and what was he trying to preach. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
When we look at the times from the time of the death of the Prophet to Imam Hussein, in that 50 years that passed, we saw that there was the era when Imam Ali was the Imam. There was an era where Imam Hassan was the Imam. And then Imam Hussein. And in the time of Imam Ali, he describes the situation and the circumstances in his time. In Nahjul Balagha, sermon number 32, it is very crucial that we know what he said regarding his time. This is, you know, for example, in every age that we live in, we are living in our times. You know, and let's say if I'm asked to describe what time I'm living in, I will say things according to what I see and my viewpoint. You know, if there was annals that were written about any period, then you would want to hear it from the expert who lived in that time and who knew what sort of times it was, so that he can describe it for us. In the era of Imam Ali, which was 20 years or so after the death of the Prophet, Imam Ali describes his circumstances, and who is better to describe what was happening then? He describes his times, and he, in that, we can analyze where the Muslim society was headed towards. In his speech, he says, أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّا قَدْ أَصْبَحْنَا فِي دَهْرٍ عَنُودٍ وَزَمَنٍ كَنُودٍ يُعَدُّ فِيهِ الْمُحْسِنُ مُسِيئًا وَيَزْدَادُ الظَّالِمُ فِيهِ عُطُوَّةً لا ينتفع بما علمنا ولا نسأل عما جهلنا ولا نتخوف قارعة حتى تحل بنا.
The first introduction that Imam Ali gives, he says, O people, we find ourselves in times where the time has become vicious, and thankless. this is a time where vice rules and evil rules, and people have become thankless. We have become thankless. You know, now which time is this? This is Imam Ali's era. From the time of the Prophet, that was, you can say, the golden era of Islam and the Muslims, where good was regarded as good and everything was pure. It took 20 years for it to become what Imam Ali is describing.
This is terrible.
It took 20 years for that time to become what Imam Ali is describing. Understand this. And from that time, I want to compare it to Imam Hussein's time. You see, looking at what Imam Ali was describing, looking at that, I want you to understand that first, then I will explain what had happened by the time it reached Imam Hussein.
Wow.
He explains it. He says, يُعَدُّ فِيهَا الْمُؤْسِنِ مُسِيئًا. He says that in these times that I am living in my era, someone who does good, a virtuous person, is regarded as evil.
Wow.
Someone who does good, someone who's muhsin, someone who does good and is virtuous, is regarded as evil. This is the time of Imam Ali. Now I want you to see the decline. Right? This is Imam Ali's time. Now the decline to Imam Hussein's time. In Imam Ali's time, he's saying a good doer is regarded as evil. And by the time of Imam Hussein, when it was his time, you see that it had gone a little bit more and declined more. In Imam Ali's time, he should be happy that a good doer is regarded as evil. In Imam Hussein's time, a good doer was regarded as a criminal. Doing good had become a crime. Being virtuous was a crime. You see how it was declining. And then he says, وَيَزْدَادُ الظَّالِمْ فِيهَ أُطُوًا. He says that the zulm of the oppressor, the oppression of the oppressor, is increasing. You see, in the time of Imam Ali, it was increasing. In the time of Imam Hussein, it has reached its height.
Wow.
It has reached its height. The zalim was in excess in the time of Imam Ali, but now in the time of Imam Hussein, it was to the extreme, to the intensity that it could reach. And then he says, in his time, لَا يَنْتَفِعُ بِمَا عَلِمْنَا. He says, what we know does not benefit us. The same thing I explained in the first speech. In the first speech I said, we know so many things, but you see those things are useless for us because we have no faith in it. We do not believe in it.
Wow.
You can be an alim and read so many books, but you see those things that you know do not benefit you. Why? Because there's no faith in it. There's no belief in it. And everyone has just learned, okay, seek knowledge, seek knowledge. And everyone wants knowledge, everyone wants to know more, everyone wants to know more. The issue is that, how much more do you want to know? How much more do you want to know? What you know is already enough for you. What you know is already enough for you. I gave the example when someone went to Ayatollah Behjat and asked him, we want knowledge. We want knowledge. He said, listen, you have enough knowledge. You have enough knowledge. You see, understand this statement. Imam Ali is saying the same thing. He's saying that what you know does not benefit you. If you had knowledge that you have, just the knowledge that you have, if you believe in it, this was enough for you, your life would change.
Wow.
If you have believed in death, Everyone has the knowledge of death. How many of us have believed in it, that we are going to die? If you had faith in it, then your life would change. If you had faith in how long the day of judgment is and the hereafter is.
Wow.
Imagine, how long is it? Infinity? Eternity? How long is the day of judgment? How long is the hereafter? When Allah says, Khalidun, is there any accounting for it? Can anyone count the days? Can anyone count the years? If you had known how much is that life, if you just had faith in it, then your life here would change. That's all you needed, it was finished.
Wow.
You would have reached your Karbala.
Wow.
You would have reached it. We have knowledge, we don't have faith in it. We don't believe in it. Imam Ali is saying, you have knowledge, but it doesn't benefit you. It's not helping you. And then he says, وَلَا نَتَخَوَّفُ قَارِعَةً حَتَّى تُحَلُّ بِنَا. He says that we are not afraid of a calamity until it befalls us. You know? We're not afraid of death until it comes to us. Then we are afraid. What's the use now? We're not afraid of the hereafter until it's going to come upon us. And this is what he's saying. If you had the fear of the calamity, then you would make sure that it doesn't become a calamity.
Ya Allah.
If you had only knew, if you had faith in it. But now since you don't have faith in it, it will not help you until it falls on you. Then you fear Karbala was a calamity. Karbala was a calamity, it came on them. And now what happened? You see these people are?
No.
That's too late. It's too late. Right? My friends, and then after this introduction, Imam Ali says, فَالنَّاسُ أَرْبَعَةُ أَصْنَافُ. He says, people are divided into four groups. Imam Ali describes beautifully these four groups of people in his time. I'll just mention the first two. And all four are bad.
Wow.
All four are bad. He says that people are divided in four groups. All these four are bad. And after he describes the four, he describes the fifth one, which is good.
Oh, wow.
This was Imam Ali's way of telling those good people that I do not put you together with bad people.
Wow.
I will describe them separately and I will describe you believers separately. These people are four. I'll just mention two of those today. Right, and this is something that we can learn from this. Who are these four groups of people? Again, I'm emphasizing the same thing I said yesterday, but adding on to that today, because I said yesterday we will talk about the average man, right? The average man, the common man. Today we'll talk about the difference between them and those who are distinct, special, elite, you know, between these two. What are the differences? The first group of people, Imam Ali mentions, مِنْهُمْ مَنْ لَا يَمْنَعُهُ الْفَسَادُ فِي الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا مَحَانَةُ نَفْسِهِ. He says, amongst them are people that the only thing preventing them from causing mischief is their own lowness, their own, they are low lives.
Wow.
They are low lives, they are scums.
Wow.
They don't have it in them, you know, because you, the only thing that's stopping you from becoming a mischief maker, from troublemaker, is your own lack of guts and your own lack of spine.
Ya Allah.
That is the only thing.
Ya Allah.
The only thing that is stopping you from doing wrong is because you don't have the money to do it.
You recognize that.
You want to do haram, but you are too poor to do it. You want to fight the truth, but you are too weak to do it. You want to gain power, but you are too low to do it. The only thing that's stopping you from becoming Yazid is your father is not Muawiyah.
Son.
That's the only thing that's stopping you, this group of people. That's what I said yesterday, that fourth group, this is that group. The spineless, faceless, gutless people who are silent. They take no sides, they're always neutral. They don't want to be on this side nor that side. They want to always escape from making a side because they don't have the guts to do it. If they had the guts, they would have taken a side. If they had the courage, they would have taken a side. But because you don't have courage, that's why you are in that position of yours. It doesn't mean you're good. It doesn't mean that you're with the truth. The only thing that's preventing you is your own self. You are a low life. That's why. This is that first group Imam Ali is describing. Because you don't have it in you. That's why you're not doing it. Otherwise you would be in a Yazid too. You would have been a Yazid too. You can see that in people. Those who have low lives, you will see. They don't do things with courage and bravery. They do things with cowardice. Right? You will see these people that they will, when they see someone strong in front of them, they bow down before them. And when they see someone weak, they will oppress them.
I've seen that.
You see that? When they'll see someone weak, they'll oppress them. Why? Because they're weak, they can oppress, they can hit them, they can do something.
I've seen that.
You see that? A man who beats up his children is what? You see, a child who's young and unable to defend himself, when you beat him up, what does that make you? Courageous? Brave?
Wow.
It makes you a coward. Right? Now when he has to deal with his neighbor, he's like all meek and timid. He stands in front of his neighbor, the neighbor is bigger than he is. Understand this, you know. This is a sign of a coward. You know? The only reason that you don't, or you're not in the position of oppressing others, of harming others, is because of your own timidness. You see that? Because of your own weakness, my friends. This is the first group of people Imam Ali is describing. This is that group of people that was always harmful. Imam Hussein wanted to bring out these people to the fore, you hiding and behind those rocks and caves.
Ya Allah. Spider hole.
You who are hiding in your homes. And those Zalim, Yazid and Muawiyah are using you to fight against me.
Wow.
They use you to fight against my father Ali. They use you to fight against my brother Hassan. I'm going to bring you out of your house and expose you.
Wow.
And show your face to the world. This is what Imam Hussein had done, right? This is what he had done. He exposed those people. He brought them out in the fore. He said, you are those people. You know, they're hiding and they're passing off as good. But no, you were the ones responsible. Otherwise, Yazid had no power in his hand. You know, if the Ibn Ziyad, he wasn't there. I mean, you were the people. And when he brought them, how did he bring them? He exposed them. These people, they came out. They had nothing. They didn't even have a sword. These were the people who were hitting Imam Hussein with stones.
Wow.
Because you're too poor to own a sword, now you take a stone and hit it, right? What did that show you? What did that make you? Brave? Understand this, my friends, how Imam Ali is describing these people. He says these are the first group of people. Then he describes the second group of people. And I want to concentrate on these two group of people. So we understand who Imam Hussein was facing. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
The second group of people, he says, وَمِنْهُمُ الْمُسْلِطُ لِسَيْفِهِ وَالْمُؤْلِنُ بِشَرِّهِ وَالْمُجْلِبُ بِخَيْلِهِ وَرَجْلِهِ. He says that the second group of people, they're different. He says these people, they have armed themselves with their sword. And they have stood up with their evil. They stand up with their evil. They stand up. They have come out with their horses and their footmen. They have come out. And they are the leaders, the ones who are on the pulpit, the ones who are influencing others. Mm-hmm. Right. This is the second group of people. Now who are these people? These people are not timid. They are strong-willed. They are powerful. They are strong-spirited. They come out. They stand for evil. And they are open about it. They don't hide.
Yeah.
And they openly say who we are. Mm-hmm. This is who we are. This is it. They openly come out, face the Imam in face. You know, face to face, I'll face you. These are those people. This is second group. They're not afraid. They're not hiding. They're openly saying this. This is the second group of people. And you look at these two groups of people. And from there, I want you to look at these two groups of people because very important. Because you see, in every time, in any group, whether it's good or bad, whether it's bad or whether it's good, on the good side or the bad side, in every time, there are always two groups of people, my friends. Mm-hmm. Right? You can always divide people into two groups. Just like, for example, when it comes to height, you say tall and short. When it comes to weight, you say, you know, fat and thin. You know, when it comes to influence on others, when it comes to being leaders of others and organizing the affairs of other people, there are always two groups of people in society. They are the leaders and they are the followers.
Yes, this is correct.
They are the masters and they are the slaves.
Yep.
Right? They are those people who have the ability to influence others. And they do. They influence others. Right? And then there are those people who don't have the ability to influence others. They, in fact, they don't know how to influence themselves. They don't even know how to take care of themselves. Right? And you'll always see these people, right? You'll see those people who are followers will always be asking, what's your opinion about this? Mm. And those who are leaders will always be giving opinions. This is what I think. You see, they're strong-willed. They have opinions. They're very heavily opinionated. They have made their minds up about things and they say this is it. Whether good or bad, that's a whole different issue that we'll talk about later. For the right or for the wrong. But you see, two groups of people exist. There are those people who are leaders. They give opinions. They form the opinion of other people. And then there are those people who cannot form their own opinion, they need help. And they're always influenced. They're always inspired by others. They always look up to others. And these people are the followers. And it's a different mentality, if it's a different attitude, it's a different character. Those who are leaders, they can organize the affairs of others. They can lead others. To the wrong side, it doesn't matter, but they can lead. Mm-hmm. Right? When you look at different leaders, you will see that there are those people who know how to organize, who are good administrators, mm-hmm. even if it's for batil. Yes. But they're good administrators. Mm-hmm. Right? They're good managers. They're able to organize people. They're able to be the leaders of people. And then there are those people who are not leaders. They're always the slaves. They're always the workmen. They're always followers.
This is true.
They're always like underneath them. And they're always looking for someone to lead them. If they're left alone, they wouldn't know what to do. They'll be like a chicken without a head.
Wow.
Running around, they wouldn't know what to do. I mean, this is the case, you know. I mean, if you see that, these are followers. These people, they don't have their own thing. Even whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. That's not my discussion. Right now my discussion is just to understand these two groups of people. These followers are the common people, my friends. They are the people who are always the masses. They're the people who are always the bulk of any society, the bulk of any community. They're followers. And leaders are always few. Leaders are always few. They're not that many. But when they are there, they organize other people, and automatically you will see they will lead others. If you put them in, if you have 100 followers, if you put them in a room with one person who has the ability to lead, that person will be leading the 100.
Yes.
Automatically you will see that after a while everyone will understand, he knows, I don't know. He has the answers, I don't. It just happens. Why? Because of the difference in their mentality, the difference in their capability. Followers are incapable, they're inept. They don't know how to handle the affairs of others. If given the affairs of others, then they also make a mess of everything. This is the reason that when we, for example, look for responsibility, to give responsibility, what Islam looks for is not age, it looks for maturity.
Yes.
How mature are you? How much are you able to take care of others? This is the reason why you see that, for example, when you, any girl who's looking for a husband, when you look for a husband, you look for this quality in them. How much are they able to take care of others' affairs? How good of a manager, administrator are they? If they are irresponsible, if they're immature, if they can't handle their own affairs, then it would be wrong for him to give him the responsibility of someone else. See, that's what you look for in a marriage, you know, like you look for that. Are you able to handle your own affairs? Yes, you are. Are you able to handle other people's affairs? Yes, you are. Then you're ready for marriage. You're ready for marriage. But if you can't even handle your own affairs, if you don't know what you're doing, and then when you get married, you ask your wife, what do you think? Wife will be like, I thought you were supposed to know. You were supposed to know this. You know? I didn't learn it. My friends, this is the reason for those people who train their children, they train their children to be men. Don't train your children to be children. Yeah. Don't train your children to be children. You know what I mean? For example, you know, everyone goes to weddings. We need to know these things, right? Everyone goes for weddings. Right? When you go for a wedding, right, you see that the food that is made at weddings, you see in the masjid, you know, anyone makes the food, you know, and everyone eats it. You know, Imam Hussain's diga, anything goes, alhamdulillah. You're fine. Right? But when you come to a marriage, obviously, you know, when you make the food, when you want to hire someone to make the food, right? If your friend comes to you and says, hey, listen, I'll make the food for you. You ask him, have you cooked before? He said, no, but I can learn, don't worry. I want to make the food for you. So would you say that, okay, go ahead. You have no experience in making food, but go ahead, make the food. Would you say that?
No.
Yeah, no. Why? Because the fact is that, you know, listen, people are going to eat. Right? You're going to mess up the food. No, I want to give it to someone who has experience. I want to give it to someone who knows what he's doing. What he's doing. So even when you're looking for a caterer to cook the food, to give him that small of a responsibility, you make sure, does he know how to handle this? Yes. If we understood that, then at least we should understand from there. That when you are giving the responsibility of marriage to someone, make sure that he's capable of handling it. Make sure that he's responsible enough to know what he is doing. Don't give it in the hands of someone who doesn't know. You know, unfortunately, you know, I mean, you know, for example, there should be a disclaimer written on all marriages, you know, should not be handled by children.
Yes.
I should not be played around by children. You have to be responsible, mature enough. That's when you can give this responsibility over to Him. Yeah. Friends, this is why you see that Islam looks at maturity to make sure that you're responsible enough to handle obligation. There are certain people you see in society who are leaders, who can handle the affairs of others. They organize, even if they're batil, even if they're wrong, it doesn't matter. But they are good administrators. They're good managers, but you have few of them. Most people are followers, my friends. Most people are followers. And it so happens that when you look in history, and you look at, for example, kings, you will see that the person who became the first king, the one who took power, the one who actually took the throne, you will see, whether by might or whatever reason he took it, you will see that he will always be strong. He will always be strong. Why? Because he fought to get what he had. Uh-huh. He fought, and hence he was strong in order to beat whoever that was there. And so he became in charge. But when his son becomes older and the throne passes off to his son, you see the son declines from his father. There's a decline. You know, son is a little bit more incapable of doing things. You see that in life. You know, the person who builds wealth for himself, worked hard to build his wealth, he is smart, he's responsible, he's mature. And his son, who was raised up in riches and spoiled, now when it comes for him to take the turn, take this wealth, you see how he uses that wealth and destroys it. Right? You will see that there's a decline. And it does happen that those who are leaders, when those leaders, those who had the ability to administrate, when they go away, then usually that rule, that throne, that wealth comes into the hands of those who are incapable and inept. And these people who are inept, one of the main qualities they have is that they're cowards. Uh-huh. Because they didn't have to fight for anything, they were given it on a silver platter. Those who are administrators, the way they deal with things is different than those who are followers.
Yes.
And you will see that. And if by chance a follower, someone who has the mentality of a follower, became in the position of a leader, then his leadership would be known by the qualities of a follower. Understand what I'm saying, because I want to make you understand the enemies of Imam Hussein. Understand this, what I'm saying. Let me be very clear what I'm saying so that you understand where I'm going with this. Those people who are leaders, when they deal with something, then their way of dealing is different. They will look at whatever use they can make out of things. But when a slave takes over, when a slave is given the responsibility of doing something, then this slave, you see, always wants to please his master because he doesn't know what to do himself.
Ya Allah.
No, understand this, my friends. When a slave mind is given the responsibility that a master should have of administrating to other people, then this slave would always be looking to please his master, where he got it from. My friends, understand this. This is when you look at the history of Islam, you see that when the Khilafat was taken away from where it should have belonged.
Yeah.
You see, when it was taken away from where it should have belonged, what happened?
Went right back to Abu Sufyan.
You see, it came in the hands of people that you can say ruled with certain amount of administration. They had certain amount of skills. They were able to lead. Things didn't become that bad.
Right back in Abu.
And then when it came to Muawiyah's hand, you see, who is Muawiyah then? You see, who is Muawiyah? Muawiyah, at the time of Imam Ali, I'm speaking, who was Muawiyah? Muawiyah came out to fight with Imam Ali. He came with his army. He opposed an army of Imam Ali. Both armies were big. Both armies had numbers. Both of them were there. But you see, Muawiyah came face to face with Imam Ali. He fought with Imam Ali. Even though Imam Ali, he said, listen, why do we have to kill so many people in this battle? Right? Why do we have to kill so many people in this battle? If it's just between you and me, just you and me fight.
No way.
Right? Just you and me fight. You know? And he wanted to expose Muawiyah. He wanted to expose to the people, is Muawiyah a leader or is he a follower? Is he a master or is he a slave? If he was a master, then he would fight like a lion. If he's a slave, he would fight like a weasel.
Yes.
You see, he said, all right, you brought this army, you're hiding behind this army. I want you to come forward, I will come forward. Let's you and me take it out. You and me, come on, let's take it out. You claim to be the leader of the Muslims, show that you're a leader, show that you're a lion. Come out, be brave-hearted. Be brave-hearted, come out, fight like a leader would, not like a slave. Not like a follower hiding behind your pack. Don't fight like that. Fight with me face to face. He exposed my. I said, oh, wait a minute. You know,
I don't do so.
Like, he was behind. You know, he didn't come forward. He sat behind. He didn't want to do anything with it. Imam Ali exposed that. Listen, if you are a leader, you fight like a lion. When you fight like a lion, then you don't depend on other people. You are your own self. You stand alone and fight. You know, my friends, this is the difference. Now, Muawiyah was exposed. But now, when we come to Yazid, if Muawiyah was bad, then Yazid was worse. You see, Yazid was worse. He is hiding in Sham. He's hiding in Sham. He sends Ibn Ziyad to take care of Hussein. You see, now see what happened, the decline. The decline that's happening. Ibn Ziyad, when he was given the responsibility, he sends Umar ibn Sa'd. He said, you go and deal with it. He said, you go and deal with it. So what is happening, my friends? My friend, understand. Those who were followers in the time of Imam Ali, those who were slaves in the time of Imam Ali, those who were underlings in the time of Imam Ali, in the time of Imam Hussein, they became the leaders. They became the leaders. Now you look at Umar ibn Sa'd. Who was this Umar ibn Sa'd? You know, on the morning of Ashura, when he shot the first arrow, he said to the people, be a witness in front of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Yazid. He said, what? Be a witness in front of Yazid that I have shot the first arrow. He said, who do you want to please? Yazid. You see, Umar ibn Sa'd was a slave wanting to please his master.
Wow.
You see, at least we got to know who the master of Ibn Sa'd is.
Not a slave.
You see, it was Yazid, even though he's a decline from Muawiyah. You see, he was still a slave. And this person has become the slave of another slave.
Wow.
You see, this is their mentality. And I want you to know this, who Imam Hussein was facing. Imam Hussein was not facing people who were leaders. Imam Hussein were not facing people who had capability. Imam Hussein was not facing people who were able and administrators and managers. Imam Hussein was facing a horde of weasels.
Wow.
Snakes and vipers.
Imam Hussein was facing a crowd of gutless and spineless followers.
Wow.
There was no leader amongst them. There was no one who can say that, listen, this is what we'll do. No, everyone was a follower. Everyone was a follower. Ibn Sa'd said, be a witness in front of Yazid. So Yazid is your master. By saying this, he exposed himself. Okay, Yazid is your master. You see, Yazid is your master. If you were at least a little bit smart, like Muawiyah was, like others were, then you would say, be a witness in front of Allah, Allah is my master.
Ya Allah.
This, my friends, is the difference. They were slaves. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
You know, Ibn Sa'd and Shimr, who were these people? These were the people who, you know, Ibn Sa'd was neutral. In all the wars of Imam Ali, he was neutral, didn't take any part. All the people of Kufa used to go there, Ibn Sa'd used to be separate. You say, I have nothing to do with these wars, nothing to do with these battles. You know, nothing to do with these battles. You know why he was brought to be the commander-in-chief? No. I mean, that's something they promised him. You know, obviously, these sort of people, remember, these followers, they never get what they want.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
They never get, because Imam Ali is saying that you're too low to get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have it in you to get what you want. Umar ibn Sa'd was promised all these things. He never got what he wanted, never got what he promised. But I want you to see why Ibn Sa'd was put in charge. You know why he was put in charge? And I want you to know this, my friends. The reason Ibn Sa'd was put in charge was a very diplomatic move by Ibn Ziyad. Ibn Ziyad wanted people to come out. Kufa was already war-wearied. They had enough wars, they had enough battles. They did not trust these leaders, these people who were there. Ibn Sa'd was the one who sat away from all the battles. They looked at Ibn Sa'd. When Ibn Sa'd was chosen, the reason he was chosen is so that he can bring the people out.
Yep.
Because they looked at Ibn Sa'd, he said Ibn Sa'd was always neutral, so he's a good man. So he's a good man. Bring him. We'll go with him because he never fought in any battle. He was always neutral. You see, those people who remain neutral,
yeah,
just by remaining neutral, they are respected by others.
Mm-hmm. Abu Bakr.
You see, that's the thing. When you remain neutral, you get respected by others. And Imam Hussein, if you believe in Imam Hussein, if you know the message of Karbala, you will never respect anyone who's neutral.
Yes.
You will never respect anyone who's neutral and saying, I don't take any sides. No, you are wrong then.
Yes.
You are wrong. Why? Because Imam Hussein had made it such. Take a side or otherwise you will always be a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Imam Hussein had made it such that being neutral is a criminal, is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
He made it such. That is what Karbala is about. To make those people who are hiding in their houses and saying that they are neutral, to make them criminals.
Yes. Yeah.
That is what Imam Hussein had done. But then I want you to see this, my friends. The reason these people, they came out, so many numbers, you know why they came out? They came out because they saw a small band of vulnerable people.
Easy victory.
Vulnerable people who came out with their women and children. They saw them and they came out to fight them. No, you haven't understood what I said,
easy,
friends. They didn't come out expecting a battle. You see, understand, these people are slaves. They have the mentality of slaves. They didn't come out to fight a battle. They came out for easy prey. They saw Imam Hussein as easy prey, a small band of people with their women and children. What can they do? We will go out in so many numbers that Imam Hussein would not be able to harm any one of us.
Yes, yes.
That's why they came out, because Imam Hussein was Muslim. That's why they came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I'm trying to
do. Now still, I want you to see, my friends, there's a difference between fighting. If you have been involved in fighting, you would know this.
Slaughter.
You know? Anyone who's a warrior wants to fight another warrior. If you ask a warrior to fight someone who's beneath him or someone who's weaker than him, he would feel insulted. He will feel insulted. He will be like, I don't want to fight him. Come on, bring someone of my caliber. Right? Bring someone of my caliber. You see, the kuffar of Makkah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala alihi.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad.
The kuffar of Makkah in the time of the Prophet, those Makkans, when they came to fight in the Battle of Badr, and the Prophet sent three people to fight with them, they looked at them and said, these are not our equals, we are not going to fight, you are insulting us. Bring out three who are equal to us. Mm-hmm. You see, even the kuffar of Makkah had that much honor in them that they do not fight those who are beneath them, those who are weaker than them. Mm-hmm. No, I want to fight someone who's my opponent, someone who can challenge me, so that my courage can come out.
Yes.
But when you are a coward, you fight like a coward also. You fight like a coward also. A coward is someone that, you know, like for example, you see a lion runs after his prey. If there's a dead corpse lying on the ground, the lion will not eat it.
No.
Lion would refuse to eat it. No, I don't want this. You know, the weasels and the foxes, you know, they come and eat that.
Carrion.
Right? They come and eat that. You know, they don't eat. I mean, you know, these cowards, they don't fight someone, their opponents. They want to see someone who's Muslim and they want to beat them up. That's what a coward is. Those are lowlifes. When am I going to understand this? These people, they came to Karbala in thousands to fight against what? 100 people?
Wow.
With women and children? That was brave? That was courageous?
Wow.
No, the reason you didn't need this many people.
Ya Allah.
You didn't need this many people, but you brought them out. Why? Why did you bring them out? Because even with that small band, you were too afraid. You were cowards.
Wow.
My friends, now I want to explain it in Karbala.
Wow.
Let's go to Karbala, and I want you to see this.
Wow.
See this. You know, these people who came to fight Imam Hussein, they were not brave and courageous. They were not leaders of society. They were the cowards, the lowlifes who had become leaders. And their fighting was also like cowards.
Wow.
How they fought
was
also like cowards. That's how they fought. You know? They would not go and fight anyone face to face. What would they do? What would they do when you look at this? I want you to see this. You know, when Abul Fazl Abbas was on the ground, when Imam Hussein had left him and he was dead, you know, that's when they came and started hacking him and chopping him into pieces. He's dead. Leave him alone. He's a dead person. What are you getting out of this?
Wow.
What are you getting out of this? He's a dead person. Now they're hacking. Ali Akbar, when he was hit by the spear, he is unconscious on the horse. He's unconscious. And then they come and started to hack him in the back. Hacking enough. What are you doing? How much are you going to cut him? Leave him alone. Hussein, the people who are fighting you are not your adversaries. They are cowards. You're not fighting brave people. You're fighting a bunch of weasels who have become leaders now. Hussein, these are the people who are fighting you. You know, when Ali Asghar was brought out and Imam Hussein asked for water, Umar ibn Saad called out to Hurmala. He said, Hurmala, ikta kalam al Hussein. He said, Hurmala, shoot. You know what Hurmala asked him? You know what Hurmala asked him? He says, who do you want me to target, the father or the son? The father or the son? You know, when Mukhtar was taking revenge, and the news of Mukhtar's rising came to Imam Sajjad, when Imam Sajjad heard about that Mukhtar is taking revenge, the only person he asked about is Hurmala. He says, what did Mukhtar do to Hurmala? What did he do to Hurmala? Hussein, you're fighting cowards. These cowards, they fight like cowards. They will not face you. When your children go to battle, they will run away from them. They're cowards that are facing you. There are lowlifes that are facing you, Hussein. These are your opponents, Hussein. These are your opponents, Hussein. You know, when the prisoners had gone to Sham, and the person who brought them there was relating the story of Karbala to the people, to Yazid. He said, you know, he made a statement and he said that Hussein was a coward and he couldn't fight and he died. Zainab was shaken by that. He said, stop what you're saying, you liar. Don't you see? Hussein was alone. He was thirsty for 3 days and he still fought. You were running away from him. You weren't able to face him. That statement shook Zainab. You call my brother a coward. You couldn't face our children. You are weasels. You lowlifes. You know, these people were so cowardly that they did not want to fight Hussein and his people, even though Hussein and his people were such a small number and these were thousands, but they kept them thirsty for 3 days so that they wouldn't be able to fight. You know, on the night of Ashura, the Shab of Ashura, the night, the eve of Ashura, you know, when Imam Hussein had sent Abbas and had asked the people and said that, listen, take my message to the people and say, I want one night so I can make ibadat and worship and read the Quran. Give me one night and we'll have the battle tomorrow. You see, again, there's no leader in these people. When that news came, when that message came, so they got together and had a meeting. And in that meeting, so they were all talking and they said, listen, no, do not give Hussein even one night, kill him right now. Yeah. We have all the people we need. He's thirsty and he has no strength to fight. We can beat him. We can kill him right now. I mean, imagine this. They one night Imam Hussein is asking just for prayers, just for Quran, so he can read Quran. They don't want to give him that until someone said, what is wrong with you all? He just wants to pray. We can beat him tomorrow also. But understand, Hussein, what kind of enemies are you fighting? These inept, incapable weasels, they don't know how to fight. They just know how to massacre. They just know how to prey on weak people. You were only 100 people with women and children. And they came in thousands to fight you. And you know, when Hussein was on the ground, when Hussein fell to the ground, you know, he had so many injuries there. Now let me just tell you this one last thing. You know, Ali Asghar had died. Ali Asghar was gone. You know, Ali Asghar was gone. He was gone. Imam Hussein is on the ground. No one is there to defend him. He's injured in so many places. One of the child from the tents of Imam Hussein, his name was Abdullah. He was reportedly the son of Abul Fazl al-Abbas. He saw his uncle on the ground, and being a Hashimi, that little kid, he was not more than 5 years old. Not more than 5 years old, but you see that this is Hussein's children. These are the children of Ahlul Bayt. They're not cowards. They're not weasels. They have been raised to be brave-hearted. They have been raised to be brave and courageous. 5 years old, and he looks at Imam Hussein falling to the ground. And he himself thinks, if Ali Asghar can defend my father, then I will also defend my uncle. He ran towards Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein is on the ground. No one wants to come near him because they're too afraid to come. They say that Hussein is still alive. Keep away from him, he can hurt you still. He is on the ground. His blood is profusely going out of his body. And so many places where arrows are embedded. This young child runs to Imam Hussein. He says, Uncle Hussein, I'm coming. I am coming, Uncle Hussein. He comes to Imam Hussein and he looks at Imam Hussein. Where does he start? Where does he start to help Hussein? So many arrows are embedded there. He starts pulling out those arrows. He said, Uncle Hussein, I'm here to help you. I'm pulling out these arrows for you. And you know, I heard my mother say all the time whenever I used to get a cut. You know, my mother used to say whenever there's a cut, it's very easy to heal it. You just push two sides together on that cut and let it heal. I will do that to you. And then he starts, but he doesn't understand. That can only work when there's only one cut. When there are two cuts and more than two cuts, every time he pushes them together, another wound would open up. Hajrukum Allah. This is the grief of Fatima. The grief of Hussein. Hussein, when he heard this child say that, he pulled the child towards himself and hugged the child. He was concerned about the child. He was concerned about the child. And when these enemies and these foes, they came upon Hussein, they tried to pull that child from Hussein. Hussein would pull it back towards himself. He would pull the child towards himself. They wanted to hit Hussein. But Abdullah would not leave Hussein. He said, no, my uncle, you get away from him. I'm here to defend him. When they heard that, what can they do? These are cowards. Hussein is fighting. He had started hitting Hussein with Abdullah in his hand. What kind of images we see in Karbala? Hussein, you see what people you're fighting. Just see, Hussein, what people you're fighting. Can I invite your grandfather to come and see the scenes? Ya Rasulullah, I invite you also come. Come be a witness to how good your ummah is with your grandson. What sort of people have taken over Hussein? What sort of people have come towards Hussein? Those who don't have dignity. When they hit Hussein, Abdullah raised his hand over Hussein. Abdullah raised his hand over Hussein so that blow would not hit Hussein. And that blow hit Abdullah's hand. The sword hit Abdullah's elbow. Now his arm from the elbow was cut, but not cut. His bone was cut, but it was hanging on his skin. His hand was hanging on the skin. Hussein pulled him closer. Hussein was worried about this child is an orphan. Good way to treat an orphan. That's how you treat orphans. That's how you treat orphans, right? You have done a good job of taking care of orphans. Hussein had given this child Abdullah. He had given this child to Zainab as an amanat. As a trust, he gave it to her. And Zainab's heart was racing in the tent when she saw a crowd around. This is the battlefield of Karbala. He saw a crowd around there and said, there's a child. She heard there's a child there. Which child has gone there? Which child has gone there? The one Hussein gave you as an amanat. The son of Abbas, Zainab, could not take this. Let me go. Let me bring him back. But she didn't have to. That child, when he was struck on the elbow, he saw his hand dangling. He broke out in a smile and shrieked out in pain. But he ran towards the tent saying, Mother, Mother, look what I've done for Hussein. Look what I've done for my uncle Hussein. My hand has been cut for my uncle.
Yeah, I'm gonna send it.